left off on Daf Yud-Tes Beis, and we were dealing with the question of Kavod HaBriyos Do Chalos Aseh Shebetorah. I believe that the last thing that we read, I think, assuming a two week interval, sometimes hard to remember, but the last thing I think that we discussed was that a Zakein Ve'Einov L'Chichodo is allowed to not return a lost object. He's allowed to not return a lost object. Because it's, as we explained last time, mitzvos de'ano machaveiro are based upon the hafkalei hakamocha. If you wouldn't do it for yourself, then you don't have to do it for other people either. That is the expectation. So, and the Gemara said we can't learn from that principle that kavod habrios is doche, the negative prohibition of lo suchal l'salem, that you're not allowed to look away, because you cannot derive principles that relate to iser v'heter from principles of mamon. And that is both, I would say, an exegetical or hermeneutical principle or argument. It's also logical. Money is different than Isser V'Heter, not in the way people popularly think. You know, there are people who believe that like real religion is Isser V'Heter and money issues, you know, whatever. You know, business is religion is religion and business is business. It's not for that reason, but it's because Mammon is subject to Mechila in almost every area of Halacha, with a couple of exceptions. The two parties, by definition, when there are two parties in some arrangement, you can rearrange the terms. A party can be Mochel, and therefore, it's different than Isser V'Heter, right? You can't rearrange things when it comes to prohibition of taking interest. Even though both the borrower and the lender agree, it's still a Torah prohibition. And there are a couple of areas in the margins. But basically, Mamonos is subject to modification by the parties. In some way, it's based upon, I guess, a social compact. So Isser is different than Mamonos. Fine. So now the Gemara quotes a braisa. Rashi explains the intro. This is actually a much longer braisa, so, but the Gemara starts in the middle of the braisa because it wants to just focus on one particular point. But it's important to know the background because the Rishonim are going to grapple with it. We know that a Kohen Hedyot, a Kohen who is a Kohen but who's not a Kohen Gadol, that would be almost all Kohanim and all Kohanim today. So we know that a Kohen is not allowed to come in contact with a dead person intentionally. It's not allowed to be Metamei L'Nes. For a Kohen Hedyot, there are 6/7 exceptions, the 6/7 relatives, parents, siblings, children, and a spouse or wife. There's one other exception for a Kohen Hedyot, which is known as a Mace Mitzvah. What's a Mace Mitzvah? So a Mace Mitzvah is when you encounter generally speaking, you encounter a person who's died, and there's no one there to assist in the burial. The Gemara describes in Yevamos, the Karulei Velo Ani. He calls out, "I found someone, I need help," and no one comes to his assistance. That's called a Mace Mitzvah. And a Mace Mitzvah, even a Kohen is allowed to defile himself. Okay, that's fine. Now, there is two other prohibitions of Tumah in the Torah, of people who cannot defile themselves to dead people. Number one is a Kohen Gadol. And a Kohen Gadol, the Torah says in Parshas Emor, says he can't even defile himself through his parents, and certainly not the other relatives. And the Kohen Gadol has no exceptions explicitly listed. Now, one thing that I should have said, the Torah doesn't explicitly state and doesn't even address in Parshas Emor, when it talks about a Kohen Hedyot defile himself to his seven relatives, it doesn't mention Meis Mitzvah either. It just says he cannot defile himself to anyone except for these seven. Kohen Gadol can't even defile himself Aviv V'Ima. And then finally, we're told one other person cannot defile himself with that person, and that's a Nazir. A Nazir who's taken a vow of Nazirus, it cannot consume any products from the grapevine, cannot shave his hair, and cannot defile himself with that person. And there the Torah says, L'aviv limo, li'achiv u'la'achoso lo yitama lahim mosa. Now, what's strange about both the case of the Kohen Gadol and the Nazir is the Torah says, can't defile himself through that person. And then it says, he can't defile himself by Kohen Gadol and by a Nazir. It can't be to a father, to a mother, to a brother, to a sister. So the question that bothers Chazal is, well, why do you have to tell us this? You already told us, you can't find that person. So unless you tell us the exception, as the Torah does by Kohen Hedyot, the Torah says, "Lanefesh lo yitama be'amav." He can't defile himself to a dead person in his whatever be'amav means, his nation, his family. He in l'shero ha'korav elav, except for etc. List the seven relatives. So the question is, why by a Kohen and a Nazir, Kohen Gadol and a Nazir, does the Torah have to say, after telling us, he can't define himself to that person, say, and not to the relatives? Now, if you ask me what Pshat is, it's pretty simple, actually. Because we know that there's a Kohen Hedyon who can't defile himself to a dead person. And yet the Torah says, but, except, so now when it comes to Kohen Gadol Nazir, the Torah feels the need to go out of space. And by the way, I know I made exceptions for Kohen Hedyon, not here. The Chazal weren't satisfied with that. And this price is going to deal with it. There's one I have to share because it's one of my favorite stories. And it actually turns out to be a Gemara. I didn't realize that. The Gemara Nazir actually quotes this full Brisa. But before it quotes this version of the Brisa, the Gemara Nazir takes a different tack, which is to explain why does each of the relatives have to be mentioned there? Why for a Nazir does it have to say the other you can't define himself, the emo, and then brother and sister? So it's what the Gemara says about the other with the emo that's particularly fascinating. The story that's told, it's probably an apocryphal story, but it's a great story anyway, is that when Reb Chaim was a child, so his father, the Beis Halevi, asked the following question. Supposing I ask you to bring me a glass of water, and your mother asks me to bring a glass of water, who do you bring it to first? So Reb Chaim said, I bring it to you. The reason being that both he and his mother are chayiv in kavod of his father. So the Beis Halevi then asked Reb Chaim the following, but I don't understand. Your mother is your mother, B'toras Vada. We know with certitude that she's your mother because people saw you come out of her womb. But I am only your father, B'toras Chazaka, B'toras Rov, because we assume Rov B'ilo Sachar Baal. When a woman, married woman, becomes pregnant, we don't know for sure that it's the father, but it's probably the father because most married women, most of the time, are cohabiting with their husbands, not with other men, not committing adultery. So if your mother is your mother, B'toras Vada, and I'm only your mother, B'toras Chazaka, which is really based upon a robe, why do you get me the glass first? So his response was, because if I were to get my mother the glass first for that reason, there would be no greater sign of disrespect for my mother. That's how the story goes. Now, it turns out I didn't realize hearing the story that the Gemara actually doesn't tell that story, but the Gemara Nazir says, why does it have to say father? Why does it have to say mother? So the Gemara says, by Nazir. Forget what, I don't know if that price that talks about brother and sister, but it says the following. If it only had said father, I would have said that a Kohen, a Nazir, if only it said mother, I would have said that a Nazir can defile himself to his father because his yichus goes after his father. His father's a Kohen, he's a Kohen. His father's a lady, he's a lady. His father's a Yisrael, he's a Yisrael. But you don't go after the mother. So therefore, I would have said, I would have thought maybe you should be metamed your father. And if the Torah had only la'aviv lo yitama, I would have said, your father you're not metame to, because he's only your father, the Torah's chazaka. But your mother is your mother, the Torah's father. I would have thought, then you are metame. So that's why the Torah has to tell us both of them are exceptions. Okay. I put that in the category, the story of rabbinic humor. it's a particular genre. So the Gemara actually, in the next Brisa and Nazir, is now analyzing, why does the Torah have to say by Nazir, after it says he can't defile himself with that person, le'aviv, le'imo, le'ochiv, le'achos. Why do you need to tell us this? So the Gemara's Rashi quotes the Brisa that starts at as follows. Why does it have to say le'aviv lo yitama? Because you would have thought that, let's say, he's a... they say la'aviv. Why do you have to tell us this? La'aviv is to exclude a meis mitzvah. And as you would have thought that a nazir cannot be metame even to a meis mitzvah. Al nefesh meis le'evo. So the Torah, after giving you that rule, says la'aviv you can't be metame, but to a meis mitzvah you can be metame. All right, but why do you need le'imo? So now the Gemara says, because you would have thought that if this person were a kohen and a nazir, he would not be able to be metame, defile himself to a meis mitzvah, because now he's got two kedushas. So Talmud Lomar, ul'imo. L'imo lo yitame, but if it's a meis mitzvah, and he happens to be not only a nazir, but a kohen as well, he can be metame to a meis mitzvah. Okay, but now why do you need li'ochiv? Why do you need to the brother? So the Gemara Braisa says, because you would have thought if he were a kohen gadol, who became a nazir, and these are two kedushas chamuros, you would have said he cannot be metame to a meis mitzvah. Torah says la'achiv, which is la'achiv, he can't defile himself, but to a meis mitzvah, even a kohen gadol who's a nazir can be metame himself, can defile himself. And finally, why do you need la'achoso? So that's the brisa in the Gemara right here. Tashma, six lines from the bottom of Daf Yud Tes Amud Beis. Tashma Ula achosoma talma voma. Why do you need that pasuk? We already know that a nazir can be metame to his mitzvah. We already know that a nazir who is a kohen can be metame to his mitzvah. We know that a nazir who is a kohen gadol can be metame to his mitzvah. Why do you need lachosom? So ma talma voma. Hareisha yeholech lishchot es pischo v'lamul es beno. The shama shemes lo mes. A person is on his way to bring a karban pesach. Or to perform a milah for his son. Rashi quotes two different interpretations. One interpretation that these are the two mitzvahs that entail kares for failing to fulfill them. And that's why these are two separate mitzvahs. The alternative Rashi presents is that no, he's going to be mal his son to circumcise his child so that he can eat from the, bring the Karban Pesach. Because the Torah says, umal ta'oso az yochavo, and it might be that any of the male members of your household not being circumcised might prevent not only them from eating the Karban Pesach, but even prevent their owner or their father, who's responsible for giving them a milah, from eating the Karban Pesach. So either way, you're going to do this mitzvah. You might have thought, so you're not allowed to be metame, but you might have thought, yacho amris lo yitame, so you're not allowed to become tame. You might think that just as the Nazir Ve'ose Pesach cannot defile himself to his La'achoso, he also can't defile himself to a Meis Mitzvah. Talmud Lomar U'La'achoso. Le'achoso hu de'ena metame, ava metame hu le'Meis Mitzvah. So even someone who's holech lishchodes pisco, he's going to bring the Karban Pesach Erev Pesach, and hears that his relative died, can't be metame. But he encounters a meis mitzvah, then the person is a mitzvah to defile himself. Now, one interesting question that preoccupies the Rishonim here, it's not a common question for us, but when the Gemara builds here, Nazir and Kohen Gadol, when we're talking about Osa Pischo, or Holech Lamul Espino, does that mean that the person is a Nazir, who's a Kohen Gadol, who's Holech Lishchodes Pischo? Or is this a totally separate case? In other words, anybody who's going to Shechtas Pesach cannot defile him or herself. The long Tosus, I'm not going to read the Tosus, talks about this question. Tosus actually thinks that it might be, there are two separate questions here. Question number one is, what is the Braisa thing? Question number two is, what is the Halacha? What I mean by that is the Braisa might be talking about someone who is Nazir, Kohen Gadol, Holech Lishchos Pischo. What would the halacha be if someone were not a Kohen, were not a Nazir, obviously they're not a Kohen Gadol, they're just going to Shech the Karban Pesach and their relative dies. Are they allowed to defile themselves to their relative and thereby they're not going to be able to bring the Karban Pesach and they will be fundamentally disqualified, they will just be a Tamei? Or do we say no, that because they're going to do such an important mitzvah, they cannot defile themselves to a relative, only to a Meis Mitzvah? The assumption is, the one assumption I think is clear, someone who's a Kohen, who's a Nazir, who's a Kohen Gadol, who's going to Shechtas Pesach, can defile him or himself to a Meis Mitzvah. That's not a question. But the question is there a prohibition on someone who's just Holech Lishchodes Pesach to defile himself to a relative? To a Meis Mitzvah, of course, that's a given. All right, so it's not an everyday occurrence. There aren't, I don't know too many Kohan and Gadolim. I don't know, I will say, I know even fewer Nazirim, but okay, that sounds ridiculous. And nobody's going to be Karban Pesach. But just in terms of the structure of the Braisa, that issue is debated. Most Rishonim seem to assume that there's a prohibition even on someone who's just a person going to Shech Kizavar Pesach on becoming Tamei to relatives and thereby prevent themselves from fulfilling the mitzvah. Okay, so that's all a little bit of a sidebar to the question of the Gemara.
So in that case, no.
So now the Gemara asks the question, Amai, why are you allowed to defile yourself to Meis Mitzvah? Meis Mitzvah is the quintessential Kavod Abrius. If you think about how does a rabbi begin the Hesped at a Levaya, we're gathered here today to give, Rabbi Feldman, you can tell us.
Our respects.
Yes, but what do we say? It's the Hebrew expression. We call it Kavod Achron. We're coming to give Kavod Achron to the Meis. So this is the quintessential Kavod Abrius. It's both the Kavod Achron and the case of Meis Mitzvah. It's a Chesed Shalemus. Somebody might do it for you, but certainly the Meis is not going to pay you back. So this is the quintessential Kavod Abrius. And why don't we say here, in chokma, v'in tuna, v'in eitzel l'neged Hashem, and you don't defile yourself. Too bad, that guy's luck. He's not worse off than the person who found a kelayim in his suit, in the shuk, and had to strip off his suit. Not any different. That was the Gemara's question. The Gemara says, Shani Hasam Dichsiv Ulachosam. The Gemara initially responds by saying, well, that's because you have a pasuk that tells you. So the Gemara says, okay, but that doesn't answer the question. V'ligmor mine. So, okay, but let that be the paradigm. Let that be the binyanah. That you see that when you have a lotase, when you have, the truth is not technically a lotase, it's an ase. And then you have kavod abrios, but it's a very serious ase. Why don't you say that kavod abrios is just like it's doche the ase of Pesach and the ase of Mila, it's also doche the los ase shevetorah. So the Gemara answers, shev the altase shani. Passive violation is completely different. And this distinction that's being drawn, and I want to look at Rashi for a moment. This is a foundational distinction within rabbinic law. The difference between active violation and passive violation is enormous. Rashi explains it. He says, Shevi Altasa Shani, second line in Rashi on the top of the Daf Chaf Amud Aleph. Dvarim Rabin, Hitiru Lakor Dvarto Mitnei Siog, Umitnei Kavra Brios. There are many things that the rabbis permitted, uprooting Torah laws, either because of Siog, offense. Because if we don't do this, I know it sounds strange. You have to violate a Torah law, so you don't come to violate a Torah law. But you might do something worse. So we uproot a principle of Torah, or because of kavod abrius, because of the dignity of a human being. Hecha de'ena oker davar b'mase yadai. If you are not uprooting it actively, ela yoshev b'mekono, you are just passive. Udvar Torah ne'ekar me'ela. And passively, what we would say, me'ela, the mitzvah is not fulfilled. Something is uprooted. Rashi explains, kigon tekias shofar. Kias shofar, we don't blow shofar, not this year, but when Rosh Hashanah comes out on Shabbos, next year?
The last year, right.
I think we're getting another one of these. When Rosh Hashanah comes out on Shabbos, the first day is the mitzvah d'oraisa of kias shofar, and we will not blow shofar. Why not? The answer is, because the Chachamim were afraid. If you're going to do the mitzvah of shofar, you're going to end up carrying in the Rosh Hashanah Rabbim your shofar, and you will be mechalel Shabbos d'oraisa. The Chacham said, "Don't blow. That's all. You don't blow. Fine." Or v'lulav b'Shabbos, same thing. Or sudden b'tzitzis. The halacha is, I think this is Beis Hillel's position. Sudden, it's a Mishnah Eidios. I think in the fourth parak. Beis Hillel are poter a sudden bitzitzis. What's a sudden? A sudden is a sheep. It's a four-cornered garment. It's made of linen. And as we explained in the last couple of weeks, that min haTorah, what you're supposed to do is put cheles on a sudden. Cheles is blue-dyed wool as part of the tzitzis. That would be shatnez. So Beis Hillel was gozer that you not put tzitzis on your four-cornered sudden, because you might come to, let's say, wear it at night when it's not chayiv tzitzis, and then you're not allowed to wear kelayim. Now, Beis Hillel did not say, they didn't say, you can't wear the sudden. If you didn't wear the sudden, you don't have to put tzitzis. You're allowed to wear the sudden, but you don't fulfill. You don't, once you put the sudden on, and now it's obligated in tzitzis, you don't put tzitzis on it. That's all. But when we talk about, you know, like if you, the Torah mentions that when you put on your talus in the morning, we don't always, there's a good reason probably we don't always do this, but ideally you're supposed to check the strings of your tzitzis to make sure nothing, your tzitzis are impossible. Probably in our circumstances, because we don't wear it all day, we put it in right back into its thing and had no opportunity to really get torn, it's not as big a deal. But you check your tzitzis. Why? Because if the tzitzis are psulim, you're not allowed to wear the beged. But it's not that it's usher to put on the beged. It's that once you put on the beged, now there's an obligation in the mitzvah saseh of tzitzis, and you're not putting proper tzitzis on it because the tzitzis is possible. So you're being mevatel the mitzvah saseh, and that you're not allowed to do. But it's not that you're performing an isser actively. You're violating an isser passively. You're not doing a mitzvah you're supposed to do. Udikavasayu tuva biyavamos. The Gemara has many other examples in Yavamos of this exact same thing. Avol. May akir be a dying to uproot a Torah law actively, where you actively do something and that is the violation. Lo, the Chachamim do not have that power.
Right? The Gemara in Yevamos establishes the principle that the Chachamim have the power to be oker davar min haTorah b'shev v'al taseh, only passively, not b'kum ba'aseh. So Rashi says, v'halo beish kilayim okro b'maseh mamish shulov shel. When you put on that garment, you are violating it right then. It's not just that you can't be dressed in the shatnez garment. You're not allowed to put on a shatnez garment. So you violate it, and that's a continuous violation. Now Rashi explains. So that answers the question why someone who is going to shecht his Pesach or to circumcise his son is allowed to be metame to a meis mitzvah, because being metame to the meis mitzvah is not the problem. The problem is, once you're tame, you can't bring the carbon Pesach, or you're going to be delayed in time, so you won't have time to circumcise your child. That's a passive violation. It means you're not performing a mitzvah saseh. They're both very important mitzvah saseh, as evidenced by the fact that the Torah prescribes the penalty of kares, but you are still violating the assays only passively. And that's why the Kavod Habrios, meis mitzvah, in fact, wins over a person who's going to shecht this Pesach or or perform a meal. Now Rashi realizes, though, there's a problem. There's a problem with a question the Gemara didn't explicitly ask, but since Rashi himself on the previous page has quoted the entire Braisa about a Nazir being metame to a meis mitzvah, about a Nazir who's a regular Kohen defiling himself to a meis mitzvah, about a Nazir who's a Kohen Gadol, so I understand why not shechting your Pesach, not circumcising your son, is a passive violation. But a Kohen or a Kohen Nazir, or a Kohen Nazir, a Nazir Kohen Gadol, who defiles himself to a meis mitzvah, the act of defiling himself to a meis mitzvah is a violation of the lo saseh actively. So how is the Gemara answer the question? Now, in fairness to the Gemara carefully never asked that question. The Gemara didn't quote the first three clauses of the Braisa, but Rashi did, and he knows that, and the other Rishonim know it's a problem. So how do you get around it? So Rashi here, let me first tell you the other answer. The other answer, which some of the Rishonim had in their Gemara, it would appear to actually be the Baal HaMor. All the other Rishonim seem to accept this. This is one case, the Baal HaMor says something, and the Ravid says, responds, but doesn't really attack the Baal HaMor. It seems to be accepted. Tosa says this, that they address this lav in another way, which is that it's a lav she'ino shave bakol. It's a lav that doesn't apply to all people. And the implication, I'll tell you what the source for this is in a second. The implication is that a lav that only applies to a select group of people is a less severe or stringent prohibition. And therefore, what one could conclude, according to that either girsa, that version, or that interpretation, is that, in fact, when you do have a lav which is not shaveh bakol, it doesn't apply to everybody, that kavod habrios could set aside such a prohibition, even though it's an active violation. But a regular lo saseh that applies to everybody, that is shaveh bakol, so there, kavod habrios, you have no precedent. You can't learn from this story of meis mitzvah, this halach of meis mitzvah, that kavod habrios would push aside, would be done. Now, it's worth, because I want to talk about the continuation of Rashi and Tosus's question against Rashi. Where did the Rishonim come up with this distinction from? That's very nice. You know, but, you know, next time you'll have a lav that only applies on Tuesdays. So that's less chomer's law. Where did the Rishonim come up with this? So the answer is, it's actually a Gemara in Yevamos. And it's a very, very important sugya. It's the first real sugya, the first real topic in Maseches Yevamos, which is the concept of asei dochalos asei. So we have mentioned this recently in our sugya. And at the origin, the conclusion of the Gemara in Yevamos is that when I have a regular mitzvah saseh and I have a regular mitzvah lo saseh, I say regular means there's no kares, there's no death penalty for violating the lo saseh, and you have a conflict between the two and you cannot fulfill both, then if in the process of doing the mitzvah saseh, the positive commandment, and at the same time you will be violating a negative commandment, aseh docha lo saseh. So I go back to my example of the tzitzis. I'm wearing a linen garment. Forget Beis Hillel's gzera, rabbinic gzera about not doing it. Min haTorah, I have a linen garment. I put tzitzis on the four corners, and the strings, at least the strings of tchelas that I put in, are wool. I violate the prohibition of lo silba. My act should be violating the prohibition of lo silba sha'anez, semeru fishtim yachtov, And yet the mitzvah, the pasuk right next to that is Yedilin Tasalach. The Torah says, doesn't matter, you do it anyway. And from that, the Gemara establishes that as a paradigm of Asei Docha Lo Sase. Now, as I suggested in my comments, Asei does not push aside, does not win over a Lo Sase, which entails the penalty of Kares. That it doesn't win. There, Kares wins. Now, so that's the rule. That's the rule. The Ramban, in his commentary on the Aseres HaDibros, not this last week, not yesterday, but in Yisro, explains why is it that an Aseres Docha Lo Sase, right? It's counterintuitive to us. Which is more severe, I ask you all? A Lo Sase or an Aseh? You say, of course a Lo Sase. You beat the guy with a whip for 39 times for violating Lo Sase. So the Ramban explains in his Perush on the Aseres HaDibros, I think it's on Zohar B'Shamar, he says that mitzvos Lo Sase stem from the Midas Hagira, from fear of God, fear of punishment. Mitzvos Aseh stem from a love of God, right? And we understand that. When I'm afraid, I don't do something I'm not supposed to do. But to get up and do something actively is a stronger statement of Abba. And the Ramban says that one who worships God, may Abba, is greater than one who worships Meira, from fear. And therefore, the Torah says, mitzvos Aseh, which stem from the Midas Ha'ava, win over the mitzvos Lo Sase that stem from the Midas Ha'yir. That's what the Ramban says. But it doesn't win over a negative prohibition that entails Karas. So I have a question for all of you. It would seem to be a klutz kasha. It is a klutz kasha, but you have to tell me why. A man, Rachmana Litzlan, dies without children. He leaves a wife. He has no living descendants. And he has a brother. So we know that the Torah says in Parshas Kisetze that there's a mitzvah of Yibum. The mitzvah of Yibum says, Yivama Yavo Allah. So the question, the klutz kasha, as we would call it, one might ask is, how can that work? Because the mitzvah saseh of Yibum should not push aside the negative prohibition of the ervas ishes achicha lo segalei, that having a relationship with one's brother's wife, even though the brother's dead, which entails the penalty of karets when done intentionally. So how can Yibum push aside the lo sase of ervas eishes achicha? It seems like a very good question, which the Gemara does not ask in that sugya Yevamos. You would have expected to ask the question. It doesn't ask the question, but it seems, I don't know. Someone want to tell me why is that not a good question? It's an absolute klutz kasha, but it's crucial. But
it specifically lists it.
What's that, Josh?
It specifically lists the exception.
Exactly. In other words.
But also, the brother is dead. The brother is dead.
No. If the brother died with children, Isaac, he had children, having a relationship with his wife entails the penalty of Karis.
But now they're going to be Yibim because the brother is dead and he left no children and he doesn't want to marry her.
No. But the point, but Josh said is correct. Let me explain. When we talk about Asei dochet lo sase, it means the following. You have to imagine a Venn diagram. You have two circles. Each one exists independently, except that there's some overlap. In other words, let's take my shatnez and kelayim example. I can show you thousands of begadim that are shatnez, which have nothing to do with the mitzvah of tzitzis. Right? My suit jacket, if it, Chas v'Shalom, had shatnez in it. Right? My suit jacket's not obligated in tzitzis. If my shirt had shatnez in it, it's not obligated in tzitzis. My socks, and it wouldn't be obligated in tzitzis. So the mitzvah of shatnez exists on its own in most circumstances. Okay, now I have a garment which has four corners in it. I have a garment of wool, I have a garment of cotton, I have a garment of rayon, I have a garment of maybe leather. Leather's not chayav in tzitzis, I think. I have all of those things. The chayav in tzitzis, I'm supposed to put tcheles on them. Is there a problem putting tcheles on them? No, there's no problem at all. So tzitzis exist independently, kilayim exist independently. But sometimes those circles overlap. If my four-cornered garment happened to be made of linen, now I have an incidental conflict between the two. Yibum, as Josh said, is not an incidental conflict. It's definitional. In other words, the Torah prohibited ervas eishes achicha. And on its own, it means your brother's wife, when your brother's alive and married to her, she's also, it also is adultery, that's two isurim. Your brother divorces his wife, with children, without children, your brother dies with or without children. All of those things were included in the prohibition of Ervas Esha Sachich Alo Segalet. Now the Torah says, I'm coming to give you a carve out. I'll give you another example. You're not allowed to do malacha on Shabbos. Okay, but I'm such a frum yid, I want to bring karbonos to the Ribbono Shalom. I take 10 of my animals, 10 of my best animals in my flock, and say, God, these are yours, these are karbonos olam. And I run to the mikdash, I get there, there's a lot of traffic getting to the mikdash on Friday, it's a very popular destination on weekends, and I come, and it's too late, I can't bring it at night, so the next morning I bring it to the mikdash, I ask the Kohen to bring it. She says, of course the Kohanim don't bring that. You can't bring your own private carbon on Shabbos. There's no hetter. The Torah says you're not allowed to do malach on Shabbos, period. So I have a very simple question. How are you allowed to bring the carbon tamid on Shabbos? Right? I understand. You bring it during the week because the Torah is a mitzvah, but on Shabbos, it's chol Shabbos. The answer is because the Torah says, Ola Shabbos b'Shabbato, Ola Satamid b'Nisko. The Torah, how do you bring a carbon? Better question. Now that's a good question.
Also, carbon tzibur.
Musaf. Let's talk about the carbon musaf. How are you allowed to bring the carbon musaf of Shabbos on Shabbos? It's chol Shabbos. The answer is because the Torah said, bring a carbon musaf on Shabbos. That by definition entails being chol Shabbos, but it's not chol Shabbos because the Torah said to do so.
But it's also carbon tzibur.
You can't bring the par helim davar shel tzibur, which the Beis Din brings, the Sanhedrin brings when it makes an error, cannot be brought on Shabbos. It's chol Shabbos.
Even though it's a carbon tzibur.
The rule, Isaac, by the way, happens to be any carbon which has a zman kavua is brought on Shabbos. It happens to be that almost all carbonos tzibur have a zman kavua, except for the par helim davar shel tzibur and the par tzibur shel tzibur and the siri avod zara. And it happens to be that almost every carbon yochid doesn't have a zman kavua, except for the carbon pesach. Carbon pesach, I mean, they talk about it like being like a carbon tzibur. Carbon pesach is really a carbon of a yochid, but the Torah says, B'mo'ado. That's why Chazal Darshan, you bring the Karm Pesach, even when it's Er Pesach is Shabbos. So that is the simple understanding of the difference between Dechia, Asay Dochelos Asay, versus a case like Yibum, a case like the Musaf of Shabbos, which I would call a carve-out. It's a definition. The Torah says, you, in this case, the prohibition does not apply. Now, Rashi is effectively going to invoke this very carefully. Rashi says, so let's remember now what our question is. Our question is, how can a Kohen or a Kohen Nazir or a Kohen Gadol Nazir defile himself to a Meis Mitzvah if it's violating a Lo Sase actively, and we don't say that Bikum Va'ase actively Kavod Abriyo sets aside a lot. So Rashi continues on the fourth narrow line in the Rashi's last word. Betumas gufe shehutra lekohen ulenazir litame lemeis mitzvah dekama akir beyadayim nekavar abrios de lashev altasehu. That's the question. I just give you the whole spiel. The Gemara gave you the spiel that kavar abrios allows you to passively violate averus, but not actively. But a kohen nazir being litame is active. Hainu taima the lo gamrina mine the hasam lav mishum. Kavod habrios who the dochi lo safsedi day. It's not kavod habrios being dochela, but rather the meikara kishenichtav lo safsedi detuma lo al meis mitzvah nichtav kishem shlo nichtav al hakrovin. Let's say by a kohen hedyot, we don't say a kohen hedyot defiling himself to his relatives is asay dochelo safsedi. We say that the prohibition of a kohen hedyot defiling himself to a person never was applied in the first place to one's relatives. So Rashi says the same thing will hold true here by Meis Mitzvah, by a Kohen, by a Nazir, by a Kohen Gadol, that the prohibition was never stated. Aval hashavas aveda upesach l'chol Yisrael nema. Hashavas aveda and Pesach were given categorically to everybody. V'eitzel kavod abrios nitnu lidachos. Al karcha hainu de dechiyasa ena biyadai. Ela biyeshivaso tidacha hamitzvah. So Rashi says that Pesach, which was given to everybody, every Jew is chayav in Pesach. So there's no, it's not a carve out, but rather It's the Kavod HaBrios being doche the Asay of Karban Pesach. But he says that, but Tumah Rashi says, was a carve out. It's a little complicated, and I want to dwell on that for a moment. I want to look at what Tosus asked, but I think we can defend Rashi's position. I think Tosus did not do justice to Rashi. But Rashi concludes by saying, Aval kilayim dibimase yadav yidocha hazot. He's here by Asarasa. Kilayim, where you're going to actively violate it, and the kilayim applies to everybody. So there's no carve out. Well, here's there's no carve out. Therefore, the person has to strip off his clothing because Kavod HaBrios is not docha a losase shebetorah if it's done actively. So the difficulty with Rashi is that it seems to be a little bit arbitrary. I admit I'm very sympathetic to Rashi. I always explain this distinction. I believe it's a correct one. I don't think somebody would necessarily debate this point, that there is a distinction between a carve-out and dechia. You have to say that, because otherwise the mitzvah of Yibum would serve as a source that aseh is doche alosaseh, even if it entails karis. You have to say that the heter of Yibum is not aseh docha lo saseh, it's a karta. So conceptually, the two are very distinct. I wish it doesn't work out textually. I actually have a term for a karta. Chazal use a term, but they use it indiscriminately. And it's a very, very famous line. If you go to shul Friday night, every Friday night, you will state this line. What do we say? Shomer v'zachar b'dibur echad. What does that come from in L'chadodi? What does that expression mean? So it's actually a passage probably in the Mechilta that Rashi quotes in his commentary on the Aseres HaDibros. Rashi says that Shamar v'zachar b'dibor echad emru. God spoke once, but we can only hear one thing, but God could say two things at the same time. That's what means by Shamar v'zachar. But what it means as a conceptual idea is two commandments were given at the same time. Rashi does quote Josh, the example of Yivama yavo aleha enervas eshes achicha lo segalei. They were said b'dibor echad, meaning one. In other words, it's not that they're two conflicting things and one runs into the other. God said at the same time, you may not do X with your brother's wife, but if there's a mitzvah yibum, yivama yavo aleha. The reason why, so that would be the distinction between aseh docha lo saseh versus b'dibor echad nem. Unfortunately, it doesn't work because that very same mechilta quotes Shatnez or Kilayim and Tzitzis, which is a case of the Chiyah. So it doesn't work that way. And I think that's what Tosus is bothered by in Rashi. The real challenge here is, how do you decide? Some of the cases are obvious, right? Yibum is obvious. But how do you decide, like Rashi's choice, who says that Tumah is a carve-out, right? One would have just said, no, Tumah for a Kohen exists, Meis Mitzvah, Kavod HaBrios exists, and they happen to conflict here. But Rashi says it's a karta.
Doesn't the Torah explicitly mention those things for a
coin? Right. I just asked Tosus this question, but Rabbi Feldman is suggesting what I think is the answer for Rashi, is that Rashi's highlighting the fact that that there is a carve-out explicitly, not by Meis Mitzvah. There's an explicit carve-out by Krovut for Kohen Hegya, which would suggest that in fact it's not a categorical prohibition. In fact, one might even argue that the reason why the Torah carves out by Kohen Hedyot, why does the Torah carve out by a Kohen Hedyot relatives? The answer might also be a kind of Kavod HaBrios. It's a narrower form of Kavod HaBrios. In fact, here I might invoke what is a bizarre and famous and important Rambam. I'll ask you the following question.
Meis Mitzvah is only Meis Mitzvah because he has no Krovit. So it's the same meaning. It's the same. To bury your
There's no one there. Okay, hold on one second. So let me want to just explain that for a second. That's where I'm going. A very, very odd Rambam. Let me ask you all the following question. How many relatives does the Torah explicitly say that a Kohen Hedyot can defile himself to? How many explicit? The answer is not seven. Yeah. I was hedging on this earlier in Shir for a reason. The answer is six. The Torah says father, mother, brother, sister, son, daughter. It doesn't explicitly say a wife. Chazal darshan it from ki im lish eiro hakarov elav le'aviv limo, and they say she'eiro zo ishto. She'er is a reference to the wife. The pshat in the pasuk is except for to his relatives. She'er means your blood relatives, and the Torah lists them: father, mother, brother, sister, son, daughter. Chazal interprets she'eiro zo ishto. Most Rishonim understand that that's a din de oraisa. The Rambam, based upon a Gemara which doesn't actually say this in a normal case, a Gemara in Yevamos, the Rambam says that really only six relatives can a Kohen defile himself to mid de oraisa, and a seventh midivrei sofer. The seventh one is midivrei sofer. And here, when you read the Rambam, it's not, we spoke about this 2 weeks ago, I think. It's not the divrei sofrim that's the oraisa, but not explicit. It appears to be a quasi din de rabbanan. So you're going to ask me, we just established 5 minutes ago that the chachamim do not have the power to allow someone to actively violate a din. So how could the chachamim declare mid rabbanan that a wife is one of the relatives of kohen can be metanik? So the Rambam says that the chachamim made her like a meis mitzvah. Why? Because the husband has a special obligation to bury his wife. So much so, we spoke about this, and Rabbi Lookstein was, well, he's not here this morning, but he was so excited when we did that tosos at the beginning of our parak, that Rabbeinu Tam, when his sister died, and he was in the next town over, he didn't treat himself as an onan, because he said, she's got a husband, he's obligated to bury her, it's not Macy, it's not my Macy. Of course, he was going to sit up, shiva, he was going to probably go to Levaya, but he wasn't an onan in the meantime, because it was her husband's responsibility. So the Rambam says that a Kohen defile himself to his wife is only midrabanan because the Chachamim made her like a meis mitzvah. So as Rabbi Feldman suggested, I think that in some sense, krovim are kind of like a meis mitzvah. In other words, it's the obligation of relatives to bury their relatives. When there's no relative around, now that person becomes everybody's meis mitzvah. So I think that's what Rashi means. Rashi's escape here, you would say, is like Houdini. You could use it for anything. You can. Rashi is appealing to the fact that the Kohen Torah has already carved out relatives from a Kohen Hedyot, and now by a Kohen Gadol and a Nazir, it's more limited. It's not relatives. It's only a universal Meis Mitzvah, but Rashi says it's part of the same carve-out. The fact that by a Kohen Hedyot, the Torah explicitly makes a carve-out should lead us to believe that the carve-out of Meis Mitzvah for Kohen Gadol and Nazir is in the same category. Therefore, this is not asay, Kavod HaBriyos being Doche Los Asay. It's that the prohibition was never stated in the first place. I would use my expression, B'dibur Echad Nemru. If you look at Tosos for a moment, Tosos Shevi Al Tasa Shani, it's the first Tosos that starts on our page. It's a short Tosos, the narrow line in Tosos. Shevi Al Tasa Shani, the Imtomar, Nozir V'Kohen Gadol, Kulma Sehu, the Yitam Elameis. That's Rashi's question. The TH Rashi, the Kro Galilan, the Lav de lo Yitama lo Nemar Gabe Mesvitsa. That's what Rashi answered. He gives an abridged form. Velo Nehira, Tosa says, I don't think it's correct. The Imkain, Komakom Damridon, Shase Dochalosase, Lekri Shevi Altase. It should be the same thing. You should say, every time you have Ase Dochalosase, you should say that it's not a problem. It's not the Doche, it's that it never was said in that particular place. The Heich Kari Le Dechia. That's not the Chia. That's B'dibur Echad Nemru, as I would term it. So Tosfos says, Ema she'enu dechia, the Hasam lo nemar halav. Just say, the lav never took place in that context. And then Tosfos points out, and this runs against my linguistic thesis, certainly. Tosfos says, Ve'od, the hamila v'tamidu pesach, the dachu shabbos, kidamidam b'perek elu dvarim, alma m'kishapur dechia. Right? Rashi, Tosfos says, we say that Mila and Pesach and Tamir are Doche Shabbos. The Gemara calls that Doche, even though the Lav was never said in that place. So Tosa says you can use the term Doche even in a case where there is a carve-out. So Elon, that's why Tosa says Nirid, the Minazir lo Gamrinon, the Man Lenazir Shekin Yeshno B'Shela. This is also from that Gemara Yavamos. The Gemara suggests that the prohibition of Nazir is less severe because the Nazir can undo it. He can go to the rabbi and say, Rabbi, I wish I never took my vow of Nazirus. I want Hataras Nadarim. And under most circumstances, the rabbi can be mativ in Nazirus. And by Kohen, the Chemi Kohen, Mala Kohen, Shekin Lav She'enu Shavah Bakol. So by Kohen, by Tumas Kohen, that's limited to a very small subset of Klal Yisrael. And therefore, in that case, Kavod HaBriyos could be Docha that as well. But it wouldn't serve as a broader paradigm for all regular lotuses. Okay. Adkan, that the Gemara now has ended the topic of Kavod HaBriyos. The conclusion is Kavod HaBriyos is Doche Yisurim D'Rabbanan. It might be Doche Yisurim D'Raisa passively. It is some. the Gemara never explicitly states what Tosfos suggests. It might even set aside actively losases that are not Shavah Bar Kol. I'll give you an example that I don't know what the halacha is in this case. You have to come up with a case. But I think I have a case of this. Take the prohibition of shaving one's head, shaving one's peos, harosh. Imagine a person went to the barber, and without asking, the barber started on one side and cut off the peos harosh. So the person sees in the mirror and says, oh my God, what did you do? So now he's got a problem, because it's bad enough to have to walk out in our circles having shaved your peos harosh. I hope it would be bad enough. But now, you know, I'm like a split personality. On one side, I have no peos harosh, and the side I do. Like, the normal thing to do, if you're not from, even if that's not the haircut you wanted, is say, okay, make me look uniform. I mean, I guess you could really mess with people's minds like that. That would be fun for a day. But at a certain point, you don't want to look ridiculous. That's really covered up rios. It's humiliating. Now, the prohibition of lo sakifu pas roshchem is not a lav hashavah bakol. There are several people in shir this morning on Zoom who are not bound by that prohibition, namely the women. Just like lo sashchis eis pasikonecha doesn't apply to women, lo sakifu pas roshchem by juxtaposition doesn't apply. So I would think that's called a lav she'inu shavah bakol. So the question would be, if the barber cut off one side of your head, and now it's humiliating to go out with the other side, is it permissible to cut off the other side? So that would really depend upon, I think. I have to do research on this. I thought of the scenario now, but Tosis is not, the question is Tosis really correct? Would the Gemara have to say that, yeah, when it comes to lo saseh she'eino shavah bakol, kavod habrios sets that aside even actively. Now, of course, there is a way around it anyway, because if you are sitting totally passively in the barber's chair and you don't move your head at all, and the barber's not Jewish, you don't actually violate anything. You certainly not violate actively. If you move your head, you don't have to shave. If you move your head to assist, then you act, that's considered an act of violation. So that, Mike, I don't have the perfect scenario, because a Talmud Chacham, a Mora Halacha, might have a way around it to spare the person humiliation. But theoretically, let's say you put aside that workaround. What would we say? Could he violate it? But you know, let's say he left the barbershop. There's no one there but himself to shave his head, to finish the shaving job. Is he allowed to finish the job? Right? That would should perhaps depend upon how do you read the conclusion, this conclusion of the sin. Okay, fine. So now the Gemara goes on. We get, after a fairly rigorous and difficult sugya, we get some very interesting agada.
Rabbi?
Yes.
Okay. Can I go back to the Hisalam to Mehem on the previous page?
Sure.
If it's Eino Lafi Kavodo, then he doesn't have to, or Talmud Chacham doesn't have to do certain things. Is this, he's not allowed to do it, or can he do it anyway and do Lefnin Mishir Sadin? In other words, is it an obligation for him not to do it? Not to find, you know, he sees a safer in a sewer and, you know, he shouldn't bend down and pick it up or something.
So you allow me to tell one of my other favorite stories, which I'm sure has come up in Shir, but I happened to have taught it yesterday because I spoke yesterday in Tinek on Lefnim Mishur Sadin. So there happens to be a Gemara in Baba Metzia, I think, on Daf Lamed. The Gemara, Isaac, quotes this idea that a Zakeh Mena Lefifodo is exempt. So they tell the story of Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi was going on the way, and he saw this guy who was carrying a bundle of twigs. And he had put it down, the guy, and he was having trouble putting it back on. So he said, can you please assist me? So Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi, who should have been exempt, said to the guy, how much is the wood worth? The guy said it's worth palga de zuza, half a zuz. So instead of helping him up, he says, here's the deal. Here's half a zuz. I'm going to buy the wood from you. Now it's my wood. Okay, I don't have to help you. And then the guy said, fine, takes the half zuz. And then Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi, what does he do with the wood? He says it's hefker. So then the guy is a wise guy. He goes and he zocha in the wood again and says, okay, now I have my wood again. I want you to help me. So Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi looks and says, fine, here's Palga the Zuzah. The guy says, thank you very much. It's your wood. Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi now says, this wood is hefker for everybody except for you. So now that's the story. So now the Gemara asks, Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi was the Zakein Beinon Lechichodo. The Gemara's answer, Isaac, is he did Lefnim Mishur Sadin. The only, I think, limitation on it would be is that if he was really Mevaza himself, it might be being Mevaza Kavara Torah. But I think that in a case where he might be technically exempt, most of us would have regarded that as laudatory, that he was exempt, but he helped the guy anyway. He wasn't obligated. So yes, it is generally speaking, it's not a prohibition. It's just an exemption. Okay. So now the Gemara tells the following story, and you have to wait a little bit to figure out what is this story doing here. Amar Rav Papa Labaye, Maishna Rishonim the Israchash Lehunisa, Umaishna Anan the Lo Misrachash Lanisa. Why is it that the earlier sages, they would have miracles happen to them? God would listen to them. Us, it doesn't happen to. Imishum Tenuye, if it's because of Shtayin, because they know how to learn, Bishani de Rabbi Yehuda, Kule Tanuye ben Izakin Hap. They, in Rabbi Yehuda's days, they only learned Ezekiel. They were very yeshivish back then. They only learned Ezekiel. That's all their limitations. Their expertise was in the Bavas. That's all they could do. They didn't have such a range in Shas. But Banan Kamasinam Shita Sidre, we learn all of Shas in our yeshivas. We know everything. We do Kachin, we do Taros. And then the Chi have a Mate Rabbi Yehuda, the Uksin, Ha'isha Shekobes Yerek the Kedera, the Amrila, I think the Mishnah in Taros, which is Zaysim Shekvashim Mitrupayim, Tahorim. I'm not going to talk about what these cases are. Where Yehuda would get there, he would say, Amar Havayis the Rabbi Shmuel Kazinahacha. All the Kashas Rabbi Shmuel had in all of Shas, these Mishnayas are harder than that. I don't know what's going on here. The Anan, but when we get here, Kamasnina and Uksin Flesa Misivasa. 13 yeshivas study Uksin, or we have 13 different Siddurim in Uksin. Like we're Bikiyim in Shas. But Ve'ilu Rav Yehuda, Ki Hava Shalav Chad Nisane, Rav Yehuda would take off one shoe to pray to God because there was no rain, it was drought. Asi Mitra. Before he would start the fast by taking off one shoe, boom, the rain came down. In fact, one of the Rishonim quotes the Agada. Rabbi Yehuda took off one. First, he got angry. He saw people were, everybody was happy. Nobody had Yerushalayim. Nobody was like serious. So he said, apparently they have too much. And a drought came. And then people came to him. They showed him how people were suffering. Rabbi Yehuda said, oh, it's terrible. People are suffering. So we have to pray for rain. He takes off one shoe and the rain starts pouring. And I think in the Medrash, he's about to take off the second shoe. And Eliyahu comes to save the day because if he takes off a second shoe, the world's going to have a mob. So Rabbi Yehuda takes off one shoe and rain comes. But for us, Anan kamit sarina nafshin, we afflict ourselves with fasting, umitzavach kaf sarina, we shry to God, it's like nobody's paying attention. So why is it? We're much bigger bikiyim in Shas. Rav Shechter likes to say that when we stand up for a Talmud Chacham, we're not standing up for the Torah knowledge. We stand up, in effect, for the Yerushalayim. And not all Talmidei Chachamim, unfortunately, have fear of heaven. But we assume, used to quote from Nissen Alpertzal, who would say that we take knowledge of Torah as a barometer for Yerushalayim. Unfortunately, as the Gemara is very clearly implying here, and as we understand the world, it's not always the case. There are people with great Torah knowledge who are not Yerushalayim, and there are people who aren't so knowledgeable who have Yerushalayim. So he said to him, he responded, the reason the difference is Amarle, Kamoi Hava Kamasre Nafshayi, Wakadusha Sashay. They were truly dedicated to the Ribbono Shel Olam. They would be Nosa Nefesh to avoid when they saw Chilul Hashem. That's what it's doing here, right? Makom Shein Chilul Hashem in Chokin Kavod L'Rav. So they were Mosa Nefesh of Kiddush Hashem. Anan Lo Masrino Nashim. We're impassive. We see things going on, terrible things, but we don't want to get involved, right? We're passive. So he explains what was the case. Ki Had the Rav Ada Bar Ava, and it's an interesting story. Chazi Lahi Kutis, the Havas Levisha Karvalasa B'Shuka. She was wearing some kind of red, bold, preacher stick a garment in the shul. He thought she was a Jewish woman. He didn't realize she wasn't Jewish. So what does he do? Kam kari minei. He was a kanoi. He rips it off her. Iglai milsa de kutisi. Turned out she wasn't Jewish. They have to pay in Beis Din for busha. Shaimua ba'arba me'azuzi. The Beis Din made him pay 400 zuz. Amarle, he said to her, mashmach, what's your name? Amarle matun. That was her name. So he now has a play on words. Amarle matun matun arameazuze shabi. In Aramaic, the first interpretation Rashi quotes is masan in Aramaic, al tafnun, pronounced masan, is the word for 200. Masayim in Hebrew, masan Aramaic. So he was saying masan masan, that your name, 400 zuz. The other interpretation, which I think maybe is better, is matun hevu misunim adin. You need to be a little bit patient, not jump to conclusions so fast. If he had just made a quick inquiry before tearing it off and found out she wasn't Jewish, he wouldn't have done it. But the point, this is a story that requires a lot of processing because I don't think we would encourage people necessarily tearing off other people's garment in the shuk, maybe even if they have kalayim. Maybe that person's supposed to tear off their own garment. But the Gemara's point was that for him, seeing this, of course, I look around and I see people behave in a certain way and I might be turned off by it, but I go my own way. And Rav Adar Rava was Mosa Nefesh. He took, in this case, he took his chances. It cost him a lot of money because he was passionate that about this Hashem. When he saw Chil Hashem, it deeply, deeply troubled him in a way that he maybe should have controlled himself a little more, but he couldn't control himself. But we are totally passive. So the answer is that Rishonim had a relationship with the Ribbono Shel Olam. They had a relationship with Ribbono Shel Olam, so Ribbono Shel Olam had a relationship with them. So when he takes off his shoe, rain comes. We're so passive, we're so moderate that we don't have this relationship. And therefore, okay, we go about our own ways, and the Ribbono Shel Olam goes about his own way. And when we're crying out for rain, it's like, yeah, you know, maybe when I get around to him. Anyway, the story is here for the taking off of the clothing and for the Chil Hashem. Marshall, I know you're going to have a comment here. Go ahead.
Yeah, so obviously one could draw very different conclusions from this story, and sort of Zrizas Ben Adam Lamakom is obviously one thing, but I mean, there are arguably so many terribly wrong with this story that to say he could have been a little bit more controlled, but he had Zrizas Vatara. I mean, candidly, that's just not how I'm feeling this story at all.
They're both true. And as I said, the story is complex, right? Because the end of the story is it costs him, and especially for Rashi's second iteration, he should have been more patient. But what the Gemara, I think, is speaking to is not the specific manifestation of the behavior, but the passionate feeling. So obviously he understood, and minimally practically speaking, that he should have waited. And the answer might not have been also tearing someone's garment off. It might have been saying something, but most of us would just look the other way. So I agree with you. I think that the sense of the story is not, I don't know if the term is monovalent. It has, I think, multiple levels and multiple implications, but in the context, but one of the pieces, clearly it was a bad choice and it was an expensive choice. And I think the Gemara may deliberately choose it that way. I'm sure the Gemara could have had a story where he tore off the garment and he was right.
Yeah, except let's pause on that for, because that's my point. In other words, number one, the fact that he's sort of fined essentially by the secular authorities takes away from the power of whether or not what he did was wrong or not.
Who says it was the secular authorities? It doesn't say that in the Gemara. And these are numbers, by the way, that are based in numbers, actually. The 400 zuz is a halakha shear.
Okay. So, but here's the question. How many examples are there in the Gemara of a rabbi, for example, ripping off a man's clothes who was wearing Shabbos or Kavayim and leaving him naked in the shuk? Right. I think there are, not to sort of put too modern a construct on this.
I think you
like,
are.
What about like Al Tabim Tei Chavracha Berabim? What about embarrassing someone that's like killing them? I mean, there are so many halachas that are actually violated by this type of zealotry.
The whole point of the Gemara is that when someone's wearing Kilayim B'shuk, the Gemara says poshta. It doesn't speak about somebody else doing it. But the question would be, if you're mechuyev to do so, I suspect someone else doing it would not be liable for boshas. Now, it's better to do it yourself. Again, I'm not advocating that it's a we're not going to run around tearing off people's clothing. Rabbi Feldman?
Yeah, I think what Marshall is what I hear from Marshall is that he's bothered by that this is the example of a passionate act of the rabbi.
I think there's a little bit of a modern feminist reading inserting the fact it was a choice of a woman.
I think that nowadays, if we were to construct the same story, we would come up with a different act of a rabbi being, you know, the think of what the rabbis did in the 70s and 80s for Soviet Jewry. And do we see rabbis doing that now? You know what I mean? Like that
might be the case. I would also note that when you look at someone's beged, you can't tell that it's kilayim. But it's hamotzei kilayim bebigdo. If someone is dressed in a particular way, so you can, when the switcher, you can see that. So I understand why a modern reader is going to look and say, oh, this is, you know, how do the rabbis relate to women? I think that's probably imposing a modern reading on it.
Yeah, and look,
I'm more struck by the fact that, again, maybe it's a statement of my spiritual
garment, which is designed to call attention to herself, which is arguably a violation of a different societal norm. This whole story is being set up in a very specific way. I don't really think you need to put several filters on it to draw that out of the text.
I missed part of what you said at the beginning.
The fact that she's wearing the brightly colored garment, which separately arguably violated mores of then and arguably now, this is setting up a very specific story and a storyline and a visual image. I actually don't think you need to apply a modern feminist lens. This was someone who was, you know, it being bolet, sticking out in a visible way as a woman in the public space. it's not modernist at all. This is the story, and it's actually I think is a somewhat troubling one because it's more than just Chatness or Kalayim that I think are being stomped by this story.
Okay. So the whatever, however you want to interpret the story itself, the response that that Abaye is giving Rav Papa is I think the same one, that that they had a relationship with the Ribono Shel Olam, they had a passion, Chilul Hashem and Kiddush Hashem concern them, and we're our commitment is more tepid. So again, maybe there are alternate ways of expressing it, but this is the way, this is the story that the Gemara presents. Okay. Any other questions?
Well, I just want to note that the I have a footnote here which suggests that this was Shatnitz.
Who did they quote it from?
Saying in Beis Yosef, Yoredeya, and the Radvaz to Ramban, and the Hill, suggesting.
The Rishonim that I've looked at.
This Rabbi Art scrolls, the footnotes.
No, I understand. You know, Rashi here certainly doesn't take that way. I suppose that creates a slightly different valence to the story. It connects it a little better to the Gemara by saying it was Shatnez, it was exactly the case, and it renders it slightly more objective.
It also connects this with the preceding, what we were
discussing. No, I understand. In a more direct way. Yes. Okay. Thank you for sharing that, Ha'ara. Any other questions? Okay. Have a wonderful day, everybody.
Thank you. Thank you
for Lenny. That.